organization, WORT qualifies for matching gifts from employers. WORT Community Radio thanks its listener sponsors and their employers who match their gifts. Il n'est pas une boîte qu'il ne fréquentait.
Welcome to Labor Radio. Labor Radio is dedicated to bringing news, information, and cultural events focused on working people and the labor movement to the Madison area and surrounding communities. I'm Susie Titone, president of the Free Congregation of Sauk County. Your support is necessary to make Labor Radio and all the great programming on WORT possible.
Hi. I'm Keith Steffen, a member of the National Association of Letter Carriers. Today, we are getting ready for May Day and have details to share. Take a look at how workers at a Minneapolis co-op are standing up against attacks on their personal expression, celebrate National Poetry Month, and much more.
In a major escalation of the crisis between the Trump administration and the judiciary, FBI agents arrested Milwaukee Judge Hannah Dugan today on charges of obstruction. Labor Radio accessed a Voces de la Frontera live feed at the scene of the protest in Milwaukee where the arrest took place.
Christine Newman Ortiz, executive director of Voces de la Frontera, opened.
I want to thank everyone who's gathered here today in such short notice. We had a very good group this morning that responded quickly, around 30 to 40 people at the steps here to be in solidarity with Judge Hannah Dugan in real time. But we felt it was important to allow other people to come to show our rejection of this overreach of the rights of judges to uphold the Constitution, because that's what's going on right now. Our next speaker is Corinne Rosen from the Working Families Party.
This is a blatant attack on people in Wisconsin, but this is a blatant attack on people all over the country. Let's be real. This is not about Hannah Dugan. This is about attacking our justice system.
Yes. Yes.
And we need to stand up. We need to make sure that we're organizing. It's not enough to just stand up today at a rally.
I'm Simon Rosenblum Larson. I'm helping organize a fighting oligarchy coalition across Wisconsin. And I'm going to speak on behalf of a bunch of groups that have been helpful in organizing resistance and a vision forward for working class people in Wisconsin. This is an attack on the working class.
Yes, it is.
We, the undersigned, express our support and solidarity with Judge Hannah Dugan and demand all charges against her be immediately dropped. We stand united against all politically motivated attacks on the judiciary and on Americans standing for justice. On April 25th, 2025, Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Hannah Dugan was arrested by FBI agents and charged with two felonies. Judge Dugan's arrest is another example of Donald Trump's weaponization of federal agencies to intimidate judges, immigrants, and any of us Americans standing in the way of the Trump administration's attacks on us.
Yes. Yes.
The charges against her represent a dangerous escalation of federal overreach into the independence of the judiciary and the rights of immigrants. We call on the FBI, the U.S. Department of Justice, and all relevant authorities to drop all charges against Judge Hannah Dugan immediately. We call on them to end targeting of judges, lawyers, and community leaders who act in defense of immigrant rights. That's all of our brothers and sisters up here today. And to reaffirm the principle that courthouses are spaces of due process, not places to target and detain immigrants.
Those were voices from the courthouse at a rally in Milwaukee protesting the arrest of Judge Hannah Dugan. This is Janine Ramsey reporting for Labor Radio.
Workers at a Minneapolis-based food cooperative say that their right to free expression in the workplace is in jeopardy after the member-owned grocer's board of directors abruptly announced a policy change late last month. Labor Radio spoke to some of the workers to learn what they are doing to fight back.
For years, workers at Wedge Community Cooperative in Minneapolis were given wide latitude to show their political colors on the shop floor on issues ranging from food security to LGBTQ plus rights and even to electoral politics. Anything that did not constitute hate speech or negativity, according to workers, was fair game. That latitude has, for the time being, narrowed dramatically after the cooperative's board of directors announced a sudden change to their workplace dress code policy late in March. Labor Radio talked to workers at the co-op to understand the origins of the policy and how workers are responding to the change. Friction over the grocer's progressive stance on freedom of expression began with pins and buttons expressing support for Palestinian liberation, which, according to the store's employees, resulted in complaints from some customers who felt that the messages calling for a free Palestine veered across the boundaries of acceptable speech. Nadia Langley, produce worker at the co-op's Lindale store, noted that while workers were initially supported by store leadership, a new policy reducing the scope of acceptable workplace expression was quickly formulated without workers' input.
Then they released this new policy pretty abruptly. It was announced to the stewards of our store, actually, in a meeting on March 20th, which was a Thursday. They were like, hey, this new dress code policy is rolling out. It's going to take effect on Monday in 4 days. Just want to let you know. Giving a heads up, but not really allowing any opportunity to, you know, give input or have feedback.
Langley added that, vaguely worded and opaquely announced, workers were unsure of how the new policy would be enforced. Taking matters into their own hands, Langley and her coworkers decided to test the limits of the policy for themselves.
When April 1st rolled around, we were like, okay, we had a bunch of staff go in wearing our Free Palestine pins. I was the first staff member to be told to remove my pin by our store director. I told him no, I refused to take off my pin. And he said, okay, well, you are going to be issued a verbal warning and you have to leave the store. You have to clock out and leave the store. So I left the store. Four other staff members were told to take off their pins that day and were told to leave the store.
United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 1189, representing the Lindale store where Langley is employed, is currently in negotiations with the co-op over a new contract, which Langley says has given the workers a direct vector to effect a change in the policy.
I think we spent 1 week at the table before this policy went out, and we were up to go to our second bargaining meeting, and we were like, okay, this is really weird that this policy is being rolled out that would, you know, directly impact staff, would involve disciplining of staff, and yet it's not being bargained. So these were kind of questions that were being raised to me. I was speaking with my stewards. We were connecting with our UFCW rep, and he actually sent in pretty quickly a cease and desist letter to the store director and the CEO, which pretty much said, you know, this policy should be bargained at the table. If you try to enforce it, it won't stand up. Please rescind the policy.
for members of UFCW Local 663 employed at the cooperative's Linden Hills location, who are currently in between contract negotiation cycles, such a vector is not currently available. Shift supervisor Rooney North, who serves as a steward for Local 663, says that the differing conditions have not prevented employees at the store from speaking out.
We exist in a weird space in that the Linden Hills location used to be a different co-op, which was why we're in a different local to begin with. The tricky thing is that these policies don't exist in our contract currently. And so there's nothing for us to like go through our local with the formal grievance process. We can't really rely on that to tackle it. So as it stands, we're doing kind of a two-pronged approach, focusing inward, making sure we're building connections between the stores, and then the outside, we're reaching out to customers, because this whole thing started with a small group of customers complaining to our board. And as we talk to more and more people, we're realizing how small of a group that was and how many more people there are who are upset that the place they've been shopping at for 20, 30, some 40 years is now of all times cracking down on free speech. And so we're trying to make owners aware that this has happened and encouraging them to turn up to board meetings to voice their concerns to the board.
In addition to challenging the contours of the policy on the shop floor, Langley explained how workers at the co-op have taken their grievances to management directly during an employee open house held earlier this month.
And we had decided early on that we wanted to determine how this open house went, you know. And so at 1 p.m., you know, the clock struck and I stepped up and was like, hey, thank you, Nick and Doug, our store director, for hosting this open house and giving us an opportunity to discuss this new policy with you. Nick had said, you know, openly that this policy had taken 200 plus hours to develop. And we just want to make it clear that in those 200 plus hours, like, no consideration was given for staff input. And so we were going to reclaim the first of those 200 hours for this open house, and we were going to respond to management. And we spent the whole hour giving testimony. Staff stood up one after the other and shared how they felt about it.
Workers that make the shop run are only one part of the push to undo the policy change, according to North.
What we're doing right now is just reaching out to as many members and owners as we can to just ask them if they're interested in showing up. And we have a lot of customers who also aren't members and owners. We're asking more people to sign up as owners if they can't, or if they like know an owner, asking them to speak to those owners that they know, try and help facilitate, like if transportation's needed to get to a board meeting, if that's the issue, that's solvable. But also, like, sometimes they're Zoom calls and like people might not necessarily know that. And that's like a lower barrier of entry for a lot of people. So there's not really one particular strategy that we need to commit to getting more members present in the process. It's kind of everyone is doing what they can to promote that engagement.
As institutions and corporations across the country struggle with their own relationships with freedom of expression in the workplace, North says that for her, seeing the policy undone is a matter of standing by your convictions or losing your identity completely.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing like larger scale companies like Target, Walmart, Whole Foods as they're rolling back DEI initiatives, kind of either complying in advance or just complying with the current administration. We're seeing their sales figures tank, and ours are not for now. And hopefully they will continue to not tank, because hopefully people will continue to see the co-op as a different kind of business. But in order for them to keep seeing that, yeah, we need to stand by our convictions, because it's easy to stand with your convictions when times are easy, and times are not easy right now. So it is going to be more difficult to stand by those values. But if you give up on them now, did you ever really believe in them, or were you just doing what was easy?
All the more fundamental for North, who says that her workplace's past support for the freedom of expression helped to change her life.
I feel very strongly about what it's done for me. I am transgender, and I started transitioning shortly after we bargained our contract, because going through that process with my coworkers and feeling such genuine and deep support from them in the context of improving our workplace, the support we got from our reps and union staff, and like true support, they were adamant that like us bargaining committee members, our hands were on the wheel. They were just there to advise us. The things that they shared with us, taught us, it really instilled a deep sense of self-empowerment and courage in me. And like, there's a lot of reasons, why I started transitioning. But like a big catalytic moment was getting the wins we got in our contract through our own efforts, and like that self-empowerment being instilled in me and giving me the power, not giving me it, making me realize I had the power to improve myself in this way. So what has it done for me? In so many words, it saved my life and is letting me live as my true self.
You have been listening to the voices of workers Nadia Langley and Rooney North at Wedge Community Cooperative in Minneapolis, organizing to preserve the freedom of expression in their workplace. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Sean Hagerup.
This coming Thursday, May 1st, is International Workers Day, and Madison High School students have announced they will march in support of workers, immigrants, and others facing increasing oppression. Labor Radio spoke to a Madison educator about the importance of this student action.
In what has become a tradition in Madison, high school students are again holding a march for the Capitol and a rally on May Day, on Thursday of this week. The slogan for this year's march, organized in part by the Madison High School chapter of La Raza and the Madison area Mecha, is "From our roots, together we shall rise." The students are asking the community to join us as we stand in solidarity with workers of the world who have sacrificed their blood, sweat, and tears on the fight for workers' dignity and rights. And the students have the support of many of their teachers. Labor Radio spoke yesterday to Leland Pan, a social worker at La Follette High School in Madison and a board member of Madison Teachers Incorporated, or MTI, the union for educators in the Madison Metropolitan School District, who spoke of the pride he and his union feel for their students for organizing this action.
I'm very proud of our students for being willing to take that on. I think the climate of today, many of our students feel there's no way to keep your head down and meekly survive the attacks on immigrants, the attack on workers. And so I think they're committed to standing up and making themselves heard, that the way to push back against these kinds of attacks on people's rights is to stand up and fight back. As a union, we support the students' efforts to organize, and whatever we can do to ensure our students' voices are heard and that they're protected is our mission.
Pan found an impressive understanding of the issues on the part of the students.
I've been very impressed with how our students are able to connect these issues in conversations with them. Many of our students, too, even come from countries with histories of May Day being an important day for workers' rights, and are able to connect the dots between immigrant rights and workers' rights. And as a union, one of the things we see is that what would most benefit our student communities is what would also benefit us as workers.
The demonstration is directly tied to the education and lives of both students and education workers, says Pan.
If our students come in feeling safe, feeling protected, feeling like their rights are in place, able to come into school with a full belly and go home to a stable home, then they're in a place where we can focus on what school should be about, which is learning, which is education. But if our students are facing instability and attacks from the government, from others in the community, they're not able to come in and put their full attention to school. So first of all, for our schools to succeed, we need all of our students to feel safe and welcome and accepted. Secondly, we have staff who are under attack, and we have staff people who are, you know, for example, here on green cards, who should have their legal rights protected, but this Trump administration has taken away.
Pan sees the targeting of marginalized groups by the Trump administration as systematic and organized.
I think something that is very obvious with this current federal administration, they're trying to keep moving the line of who's socially acceptable to kind of push out and marginalize. They're trying to grow, say, oh, we're going after just undocumented people, and then it's going after people with green cards who've been involved in civic engagement, and then it's, you know, going after citizens and birthright citizenship. We know that if we don't stand up for those who are being under attack now, it'll come to us eventually. I think it's really important in a moment like this to recognize that collective solidarity, that we're all under attack, and that also none of us are free until all of us are free.
Pan notes that many students and teachers will also attend a rally the next day in Madison, Friday, May 2nd, organized by Voces de la Frontera to be held at Brittingham Park, and urges community members to attend as well.
There will be a Madison Action by Voces on May 2nd, and we've told our membership, for those who it doesn't interfere with their work hours, to definitely attend the May 2nd action. The more we can just stand up as a community together, I think, the better.
That was Leland Pan, a LaFond High School social worker and board member of MTI. The Madison High School student-led marches and rally are starting from East High School, 2222 East Washington Avenue, and from West High School, 30 Ash Street, both in Madison, gathering around 9 a.m. with marches at the state capitol from both schools starting around 10 and arriving at the capitol for an 11:30 rally. A flyer is on the South Central Federation of Labor website at scfl.org. For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Jaboski.
Federal employees facing termination have a new resource to fight back. Carol Weidel has the story.
Federal workers are organizing to fight back against layoffs. The AFL-CIO introduced a new network of federal worker unions and groups. Groups like We the Action and Democracy Forward, among others, are coordinating to connect these workers to a network of thousands of lawyers. These lawyers get workers the free legal support they need. Federal workers can help build the network in several ways. First, workers who get fired from government jobs or are concerned about their employment can get help. Federal workers are the heart of our government. They ensure that the critical services working families rely on will run smoothly. Current or former federal workers can seek help confidentially and connect to a network of pro bono attorneys. All across the country, federal workers need legal support. Lawyers can join the network to help federal workers who have been illegally fired. They can receive training to assist workers in need of support. In addition, the network has a library of resources to help workers understand their rights and legal options. Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, said the following, "We are still operating as though there is rule of law. We are suing when things go awry, but we are watching closely to see that the rule of law holds." Workers can tell their friends, family, and networks about this new resource, and finally, they can contribute to support the network's work. Workers can visit the website workerslegaldefense.org. Sources for this story include the AFL-CIO, the New York Times, and the Federal Unionist Network. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Carol Weidel.
A federal judge is poised to block the Trump administration's executive order stripping collective bargaining rights from hundreds of thousands of federal workers. In a hearing for a preliminary injunction to the Trump administration's recent executive order, which attempts to take away public employees' rights to collectively bargain, U.S. District Judge Paul Friedman questioned the administration's arguments, specifically that they can exclude some agencies from their rights to collectively bargain because their work is primarily focused on national security. Trump's order claims that allowing unions is a threat to national security. The judge referenced Trump's own words in the hearing to show that the executive order was intended to punish certain unions, like the National Treasury Employees Union, who brought the lawsuit against the administration, and not others. Reports indicate that the judge will likely grant the union's request for a preliminary injunction, saying he also intends to issue his decision as quickly as possible. Quote.
ejército del Ebro, rumba la rumba la rumba la. El ejército del Ebro, rumba la rumba la rumba la. Una noche el río pasó, ay Carmela, ay Carmela. Una noche el río pasó, ay Carmela, ay Carmela. Pero nada pueden bombas, rumba la rumba la rumba la.
This Monday, April 28th, is the annual observation of Workers' Memorial Day, remembering those who have suffered and died on the job and to organize the fight for safe jobs. This year, the Trump administration and DOGE are putting workers at even greater risk. Join workers, union leaders, and elected officials at the South Central Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, commemorates those workers who never made it home, and to fight for those who did this Monday, April 28th at 10:15 a.m. on the Madison Labor Temple grounds, 1602 South Park Street in Madison. More information is on the Scuffle website at scfl.org.
Following are some of the many events happening on May 1st and May 2nd this week in Madison and across the state.
May 1st is May Day, International Workers' Day. The immigrants' rights group, Voces de la Frontera, has organized its annual May 1st Day Without Immigrants and Workers in Milwaukee, starting at Voces headquarters, 733 West Mitchell Street at 9:30 a.m., and marching to a rally at Milwaukee's Zeidler Union Square at 301 West Michigan Street. More information is at vdlf.org. Also on May Day, that evening, starting at 6 p.m., the Wisconsin Bail to People Movement and others are holding a demonstration at Houdini Plaza, 111 West College Avenue in Appleton. More information is at wibailoutpeople.org. Here in Madison, also on May Day, as announced earlier, student-led marches sponsored by La Raza and Mecha are starting from East High School, 2222 East Washington Avenue, and from West High School, 30 Ash Street, both in Madison, gathering around 9 a.m. with marches to the state capitol from both schools starting around 10 and arriving at the capitol for an 11:30 rally. That evening, the Madison Area Democratic Socialists of America, the DSA, is holding a May Day mass meeting and panel discussion on the UAW proposed May Day 2028 union contract coordination and mass strike action at 7 p.m. at the Labor Temple, 1602 South Park Street. Then, on Friday, May 2nd, Voces de la Frontera is holding a Madison Day Without Immigrants and Workers rally at 3 p.m. at Brittingham Park, West Washington Avenue and Park Street in Madison, with a 4 p.m. march and a 4:30 rally at the Capitol. Information for the May 1st and May 2nd Madison rallies are on the Scuffle website at scfl.org. For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Jaboski.
On the second Saturday in May, May 10th this year, the National Association of Letter Carriers holds its annual Stamp Out Hunger food drive. Food bags will be delivered to households in the week before the food drive. Please leave non-perishable foods near the mailbox in the food bags if possible. No glass containers due to possible breakage. Co-sponsored by the National Rural Letter Carriers Association, the United Food and Commercial Workers, the AFL-CIO United Way, and the U.S. Postal Service, among other corporations.
Tom Kozlowski was a longtime union member. For 25 years, he worked for the state of Wisconsin as a tax assessor. When he died at age 91, he left a legacy of activism. Tom was a dedicated birder and hiker. He was always up for an outdoor adventure and passed on his love of the outdoors to all who knew him, especially his nieces and nephews. Once he retired, Tom wintered in Hawaii, thoroughly appreciating the aloha spirit and wonderful weather. Tom was active in many community groups and activities, such as WORT Radio and the Solidarity Sing-Along, singing at the Capitol Building in Madison every Friday until just a few weeks before he passed away. A celebration of life will be held at Marshall Park at the Shelter by the Lake, 2101 Allen Boulevard, Madison, from 12 noon until 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 10th.
I'm Susie Titone. Thank you to the Labor Radio Collective, including reporters Greg Jaboski, Janine Ramsey, Carol Weidel, Sean Hagerup, Bryant Novinska-Lois, Carl Davalos, Assistant Robin G., and Damage Control Specialist Joanne Powers. Special thanks to Keith Steffen, our reader coordinator, and to all of our readers and members of the IBEW Local 2304 WORT Staff Collective.
And I am Keith Steffen. We would also like to thank all of the generous contributors to Labor Radio and WORT. Please stay tuned for the Blues Cruise with Dave Watts and the Professor Bill Clark.
Attention WORT volunteers and donors. WORT is holding an election for 4 open board seats, 2 participating member seats, and 1 listener sponsor seat to serve 3-year terms, and 1 listener sponsor seat to serve a 2-year term, all 4 terms beginning at the annual meeting in June. The 2-year seat will conclude in June 2027, while the 3-year seats will conclude June 2028. Financial acumen, computer literacy, and a willingness to work with a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Thursday, May 15th, to ensure consideration. Voting begins on Thursday, May 29th, and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 29th. More information and board applications are available at wortfm.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.